50, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Doug Padgett here, really thrilled to be talking with Angie Craig, who's running for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. Angie Craig, nice to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, Doug, thanks for having me.
I've been excited about this for a long while, so it's a real treat. I'm excited about your candidacy. I'm looking forward to your win, and just want to let you know how much we appreciate people like you putting yourself out there and being willing to say that you'll take up the mantle of representing the 2nd Congressional District, in a lot of ways representing the entire state of Minnesota. So I'm a big fan.
Well,
I've
been looking forward to this rematch for a long time as well. So thanks, Doug.
Yeah. Okay. That's where I wanted to start. The idea of a rematch. How are you approaching the race this time in ways that are unique to what you did a couple of years ago?
When you think about a couple of years ago, I was really just introducing myself to Minnesota. I spent 22 years in the private sector and stepped out to run for Congress in 2016, and I got within just over one percentage point of winning it during a Republican wave year. So this time around, I'm traveling around the district. I've done the heavy lifting of introducing myself, and frankly, I'm doing a lot of listening. I'm focused on this race here in front of me, and I really think this election's going to be about who can deliver results for the district on healthcare, who can help drive down the cost of healthcare, who's going to focus on reducing the cost of higher education and expanding our VOTEC. Who's going to fight for, another lane on Highway 35 around Lakeville? Who's going to fight for that interchange at Elko New Market? I think this race is going to be about, who's going to represent the 2nd District well in Washington.
I really appreciate the focus on those issues, because I do think that they matter, and they're obviously dear to you, and they're part of the reason you're running. And in your particular race, this is also about the person who's running, right? I mean, there is Jason Lewis is a particular personality, and in and above the difference on policy and the difference on issues, how important do you think it is for people to pay attention to you, who you are, and how you conduct yourself, and who Jason Lewis is, how he is, and how he conducts himself? That's really important to me. I mean, that's part of the reason, in addition to the policies that I agree with you on, I'm really inspired by you and by your candidacy. How do you view that?
Well, I think, I'm gonna run on the things that I believe in and the things that I'm going to fight for. I'm going to talk about, reducing the cost of healthcare. I'm going to talk about expanding VOTEC and infrastructure investments and getting the corruption out of Washington. On the other hand, Jason Lewis, as you mentioned, has said an awful lot of things about a number of groups of people over the years on the radio. And I don't believe Jason represents Minnesota values, but I'm going to let voters decide that on election day.
Right.
And I'm going to stay focused on the things that I'm going to fight for on behalf of Minnesotans. And again, the voters will get their say.
On your website, which people can find at angiecraig.com, you have a nice little section that says Meet Angie. It's a typical thing on candidate websites, of course. And you start out with your own story and saying that you grew up in a family with, as you put it, with a lot of love and plenty of hardship. And I appreciate your sharing that and a bit of your own story of how you grew up and what it was like, and how the programs in the government, as well as those people who supported you in the private parts of your life, were so supportive. Can you talk a bit about what your experience in the early days of your life has done for you and has shaped your political imagination, and how people should think about you when they walk into the voting booth, thinking about your own background and history?
I had the great privilege of growing up in a family that, told me that I could do and be anything that, I wanted to growing up. And the example that my mother and my grandmother showed me every single day is, my mom was a single mom. My dad left when I was 9 years old. And my mom took 9 years to go to school and work at night, raising us and get her college degree. And my grandmother went back to work at 60 years old, working in a union shoe factory, dipping heels in glue. And, there was a time in this country where if you were willing to work hard, if you were willing to earn it, that, you know, this country would provide you your own version of the American dream. That's what I lived. I certainly had to fight for it. I fought my way out of a mobile home park. That was affordable housing to our family. And we were proud of the fact that we'd had to work and that we'd worked our way up here from where we started. And I think that ought to be available for every family in this country again. And the sad truth is it's just not today.
That's right.
I worked two jobs to put myself through college. You can't do that anymore in this country. The cost of higher education is too much. I worked my way up to one Minnesota healthcare company onto the leadership team, and I had responsibility for about 16,000 employees, 4,000 right here in Minnesota. And we're not investing in vocational technical skills training anymore in this country. And I just think we've got to get back to a time where we're investing in Americans. Wages aren't rising, and you can talk about GDP growth until you're blue in the face. But if people's paychecks aren't going up, and it's not helping anyone. So certainly, my own childhood, my own experience has informed. I want to fight for all Minnesota families the same way I had to fight in my own life.
And that's what I find so helpful, especially in the current state of the Democratic posturing and the Democratic messaging. I hear an awful lot from Republicans saying things like, well, you Democrats are the elites, this kind of condemnation that if people are open, if they're inclusive, if they're open to new ideas, that somehow being informed and believing in science and being inclusive of people in our society and saying things like Black Lives Matter, somehow that gets pitched as some sort of, I don't know, like West Coast or East Coast elitism that isn't really in touch with the real issues of people's lives. And I feel like the Democratic Party across the country and even here in Minnesota is in jeopardy of losing the narrative of being deeply connected to the issues of middle class and lower middle class people that are fighting for a place to in this society. Do you have that same sense? Do you feel that there's needs to be a special emphasis put on Democrats representing more base issues for people in the state of Minnesota?
Well, I spent a whole lot of time just traveling around listening to folks after this last election. And, what I'll tell you is that, I can't solve all the messaging problems for the Democratic Party, but I sure go around in my own district talking about how I promote and will fight for working families in this country. And when I talk about, that from a healthcare perspective, when I'm talking, it's from someone who grew up in her own family without access to health insurance for part of her childhood and has spent 22 years working in two healthcare manufacturing companies. So there's nobody in the world who is going to know better that if healthcare isn't affordable, it's not accessible to you. And, one of the things that I think, we can do a much better job of as Democrats is just, look, we've talked about access to healthcare for almost a decade, and we all know that made a lot of progress on healthcare. But at the end of the day, it's still not affordable for a lot of families. And so I think we've got to turn this conversation toward how are we going to stand up and fight the special interests that exist in Washington and help to lower the cost of healthcare. I think we've got to start, talking to really what matters at the end of the day are kitchen table issues. If you can't save money, if you can't afford your grocery bill, it's hard to think beyond the basics. And frankly, we can't forget that as Democrats.
I've got a couple of questions I love to ask people who are running for Congress. They're kind of standard. And that has to do with how you present yourself in your public space on your website. And I'm sure you know your website very well. And at the top, you have a couple of rolling banners. And I'd encourage people to go to angiecraig.com and to see the Get Involved button and the Donate button and all that's there. And the selection of photos is says something about a candidate. And the first one that comes up on yours is you were surrounded by, looks like your family, and a dog right in the middle of it. So I'm going to put you in that hard place as a candidate and say you are a dog, not cat person. And
we've had both over the years, so we'll put it that way. But you're looking at our dog named Summit, Summit is not named after the beer, although the beer is very, very good. Summit is named after Pat Summit, who is the winningest basketball coach in history. So she was the coach of the Tennessee Volunteers for a number of years. We're basketball fans in this house, and in particular, Leafs fans in this house.
I gotcha. I'm going to stay on your website for a minute, and then after the break, I'm going to hit you with a little few more pointed, tougher questions. But what do you hope when people go to your website that they click on first to really get a picture of what you're doing and what you're up to and how you're posturing yourself in this race? What do you hope, and are you messaging that you hope people see?
Well, I think, you know, the Meet Angie section on our website. Look, I'm still introducing myself to a number of voters here inside the 2nd Congressional District. And if you look at that page, I wrote every word of it. What I want voters to know is I'm going to be straight with you. I'm going to tell you like it is. You know, when you look at that, the first thing you're going to see is I have a wife and we have 4 sons. Voters, you know, I talk about my family in exactly the same way that any candidate would talk about their family. I come from a background of humble beginnings. I've been given, an extraordinary opportunity in this country. And, you know, at the end of the day, I want to make sure that this country is available to everyone. It shouldn't matter how much money you're born into. It shouldn't matter the color of your skin. It shouldn't matter what religion you worship or who you love. This country, if you're willing to work hard, ought to be available to every single one of us. And that's what we're trying to communicate, and that's certainly what I'm going to fight for as a member of Congress.
Angie, are there other people in Congress who are married to someone of the same sex? Are there any same-sex married Congress people currently?
Yeah, I think there are about 6 members who happen to be from the LGBTQ community in Congress today. Most of them are guys. And actually, it's interesting. I was told recently that I would be the first mother ever elected to Congress. That's a mother who happens to be married to a woman. Let me put it that way.
Yes. Yes.
And if you look at my website under news releases, you'll find a story of me having to fight for my son Josh. Josh is now. He'll be 21 years old in December, but all those years ago, another state wondered if 2 women ought to be able to raise a child, and we fought that all the way up to the Supreme Court in another state. And so, you know, when you get up every morning of your life and you wonder for 3 years, am I going to have my young son in my house to put to bed that night? That certainly has an impact on you, and frankly, it makes you unafraid of anything, because there's nothing in my life that I'll face as tough as that fight. And so it really has helped shape the kind of approach I've taken to, you know, service in my community. It's, I'm going to stand up and fight for what I think is right, and I hope voters will give me a good look.
Well, that's part of the reason I'm a fan and a supporter. That's Angie Craig. Angie, you can stick with us over the break. Is that right? And give us
Absolutely.
Another couple more minutes. All right. 952-946-6205 if you have some thoughts, questions, or comments for Angie Craig. We'll be back here after the break.
Crazy about pets? We are too. The Pet Connection Show is a great venue for fun, informative, and creative conversations about pets. Join myself, Kathy Menard, and Dr. Nicole Parole, along with guests who are leaders in the dynamic and growing pet industry, as we discuss healthcare, relationships, behaviors, and even political issues as they relate to our pets. So come, sit, stay for the Pet Connection Show, Sundays 11 a.m. to noon on AM 950 Radio, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Located just north of 50th and France, the Great Wall Restaurant has provided a delicious taste of authentic Chinese cuisine since 1981. Specializing in Sichuan and Peking dishes, they offer one of the most extensive menus in the Twin Cities. Favorites include hot and sour soup, pan-fried dumplings, and mushu pork with homemade Chinese pancakes. Stop by their Edina location or call for takeout at 952-927-4439. See the full menu at greatwallrestaurant.us.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug from Hidden Edges Radio. When I'm not on the radio, I'm standing in front of audiences training about diversity and inclusion and on how to be welcoming to others who are different from us. More than ever, employers and organizations need professional diversity and inclusion training. I can offer that training through my company, Human Inspiration Works, LLC. I'd love to make your workplace or organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
The fine folks at Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for you or the book lover in your life. Find a huge selection from a locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. They are always bringing in top authors from around the globe for special in-store events. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul or shop online at commongoodbooks.com.
Hey, welcome back. Doug Padgett here talking with Angie Craig about her run to be our congressperson from the 2nd Congressional District, which, if you don't know your districts and where they lay out, that is south of the Twin Cities. And Angie, it is quite a large and diverse set of communities that you will be representing when you are a congressperson. And I would imagine that presents a particular challenge for any congressperson to have to consider all the needs and the opinions of people across the district as large and diverse as the one that you're looking at.
It really does. It's one of those districts where we've got about 20% rural voters and about 80% suburban voters. So, you know, I grew up in farm country in rural America, and you know, I've lived in the suburbs for many years. So, in a way, I think I'm the perfect fit for this congressional district.
All right. So I've got three sort of quick fire questions for you. What one of those has to do with where do you place yourself on the spectrum of the progressive side, the moderate, or a conservative side? And whether or not you like those titles, where do you place yourself in that run and in that spectrum? Because I know there's a lot of pressure for someone in a district like the one you're running to have to reach out to people who would see themselves as Republicans or conservatives. Where do you put yourself on the conservative, moderate, progressive spectrum?
Well, I don't even know what's on that spectrum anymore. I mean, you look at the current Republican Party, and what I would tell you is you know, I'm someone who is going to be looking for other, you know, members of the Republican Party who are also searching for someone who is a Democrat, where we can find common ground. And you know, I think on any issue, you know, you take the farm bill, for example. This has been the most partisan farm bill process in the House that, you know, we can remember. Then Colin Peterson can remember, he would tell you. And, you know, I think we've got to figure out how we work together in this country again. And, you know, I certainly have a set of values that I'm never going to compromise, but I also am the kind of person who believes I spent 22 years in, you know, in the business world, and you don't always get everything you want. And sometimes you're only going to get a piece of it, and you're going to have to, you know, progress or move forward. And I think what people are really looking for in my congressional district are, you know, elected leaders who are willing to work together and to try to get our country back on track.
Yeah, and there's kind of two ways that people hear that, that working together. One is that you don't get to fully be yourself because you have to give up something important to you. And to others, they would say, no, the way you represent the give and take is to know very well the needs, desires, passions, and arguments of people on the other side, but you never give up your own values. So you're not giving up 30% of what you hold to so that somebody else can have 30% of gain, but you fully represent your views and fully understand those who differ from you and be sure that they know that you represent them as well. Do you have a particular philosophy that you think you will utilize as you think about representing a wide range of constituents in the 2nd Congressional District?
I think the most important thing any member of Congress can do is stand and listen. And, I know that's certainly one thing that our current congressman hasn't done. He it took him almost 20 months to have a town hall, and required a ticket, and the room was half empty. So, I think you've got to listen to folks where they are in terms of, even when they don't completely agree with you or you them, and you've got to at least take some time to understand and empathize with that. I'm always going to fight, right? But I'm not going to quit the fight just because I don't get 100% in the first swing, right? I'm going to take 30 and keep pushing for 50 and keep pushing for 80. And I think that's the kind of member of Congress that I'm going to be. I don't like these labels, right? Because, if you look at the pendulum for both parties, we spend, if it's swinging left or right, you spend twice as much time in the middle, when you think about it that way. And I'm just going to fight for what I believe in. And I hope voters will, look at my policy position. I'm going to fight for what I believe in. But on the other hand, I'm always going to ask, what's it going to cost and who's going to pay for it? So, I think those are legitimate questions. And as a member of Congress, I think we have to ask those questions and be fiscally responsible, unlike adding $2 trillion to the deficit once you service the debt to give large corporations and very wealthy people a tax cut. To me, that was exactly the wrong priority to spend $2 trillion on.
For many voters right now in this cycle, thinking about what they're going to do in the next 60 days, opposition to the Trump administration and the Trump administration's way of being is a high priority. There are people who are what I refer to as the newly enraged voters. They are mad in a way they've never been mad before, and they want Congress to do something about it. Some kind of restraint, some kind of pushback on what seems to be an incompetent and dangerous Trump administration. So outside of the typical flow of what's going to happen in politics, to a lot of people, and I'm one of them, there is a present danger and problem in this administration, and Congress and the House of Representatives is the first line to do something about it. How do you view that? Where do you view your motivation to as being a Congress? I know this isn't why you're running, because you wanted to be a congressperson before Donald Trump was the president 2 years ago. But where does opposition to the Trump administration fit for you and what you feel it will be your responsibility come January of 2019?
Well, there's no doubt that there's an element of just feeling like there needs to be a check and balance in this country among certain voters, and especially among independent voters. I'm picking it up just anecdotally as I talk to folks. But, to me, I'll be honest. I just want to work on lowering the cost of healthcare, especially prescription drugs. I've got 22 years of healthcare experience that I want to take to Congress and fight to lower the cost of healthcare. I want to expand vocational technical education. Now, we've got, three sons who are out of the house. One is still a sophomore in high school, but one of our sons is in trade school. And I think and our other two are in traditional four-year colleges. And, I want to make sure that we have the right workers for the jobs we have in Minnesota. I want that interchange at Elko New Market. Lots of folks are going to Washington for lots of different reasons. I'm going because I really want to fight for the infrastructure investments and the things that I believe are really going to help us grow the economy and put more money in the hands of the constituents in this district because, you know, at the end of the day, I want, you know, the income inequality that we're seeing in this country to be reduced. I want to fight to make sure every family has a fair shot, and that's why I'm running for Congress.
Thank you, Angie. That's Angie Craig. You can vote for her on November 6th if you live in the 2nd Congressional District here in the great state of Minnesota. Angie Craig, congratulations on your run, and all the best to you. Hey, Doug Padgett, we'll be back here on tomorrow.